Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
I don't know about you, but we are about good and done with the fiscal cliff around here. What we need is a little rebranding. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 9th of November. Good to have you with us, everybody. Both the Speaker of the House and the President of the United States took a turn before the microphones today, spinning their versions of what has to happen to fix the dreaded fiscal cliff, that end-of-year combination of expiring tax cuts and big government spending cuts that is looming. It is really an inside Washington phrase. Ben Bernanke is the guy who thought of it, for crying out loud. So it does seem that it's just screaming for a makeover. Marketplace's Eve Troeh explains how difficult that might be.
Pretend you're a branding expert in a brainstorm. Fiscal cliff. Fiscal cliff. What does that say? How does that feel?
It feels Armageddon-ish, if that's a word.
Well, it is now. That's David Ceriri, CEO at branding firm Siegel Gale. Think of what goes along with a cliff. Falling over the edge.
The words communicate the gravity of the situation. And they're, I believe, intended to instill fear of an economic freefall.
But most economists say that's not what we're facing. Tax hikes won't bankrupt households. Budget cuts and government layoffs won't come all at once. It's more of a fiscal slope or slow fade or hill, not cliff.
I mean, we're not Wile E. Coyote here.
Debbie Millman is a partner at Sterling Brands.
This is a real situation. But we don't need to fall. We can fix it before we fall off that cliff.
She prefers fiscal fix. But all the gurus I talked to agreed fiscal cliff has serious appeal, including brand designer Brian Collins.
Those two words together, it's an instant story.
It has tension. It's, well, it's a cliffhanger. Collins compares it to the term acid rain. That image was so powerful, even politicians who hated it couldn't fight it.
The most potent story, the one that gets people's blood running through their veins, is the story that will win.
He says fiscal cliff may not be accurate, but it is a successful brand for the Fed. It gets citizens and politicians' attention. I'm Eve Troeh for Marketplace.
Got your attention. We went on Facebook and Twitter today, asked you for your fiscal cliff rebranding ideas. Here's a couple.
My so-called fiscal cliff, starring Ben Bernanke, Kai Rizdahl, and Claire Danes.
The one-way highway to economic disaster.
Momentary monetary mission impossible.
Fiscal whoopsie.
The big empty threat. How about fiscal bluff? That's what both parties are doing to each other.
What's up, fiscal cliff?
Traders tried to rally today, cliff or no cliff. You can still send us yours, by the way. We're at Marketplace APM on Twitter. Traders couldn't get it done. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. It's been quite a week, I'd say. A presidential election, the aforementioned cliff, uneasy markets, the whole smash. So here to put it all in context for us, we've got Catherine Rampell from the New York Times, Felix Salmon from Reuters. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Catherine, what do you think? Is this a cliff, a slope, a berm, a small hillock? What do we got?
It's a mess, whatever it is, I guess.
Top out. Come on.
Well, I mean, I don't know what the right branding is. I think that the main thing is we want it to be over. Whatever we call it now, we want it to just pass.
Felix, is this something that come the 1st of January is going to hit us between the eyeballs, or is it going to be a slow fade, as it were?
On the 1st of January, the tax rates go up, but you don't pay your taxes until the end of the year. So if they manage to fix it at any point over the year, I think we'll be okay. There's nothing tax-mageddon-ish. That was the old
word. You'll see the payroll taxes go up.
Yeah.
And so
that happens immediately.
Your paycheck will be that, you know, many dollars smaller. But we've had a bunch of payroll tax cuts, deliberately temporary payroll tax cuts for a while. So that's likely to happen anyway, whether we manage to solve the fiscal cliff problem or not.
You know what's funny? You guys are actually, just listening to you, you're remarkably blasé about this whole thing. Do you not believe, Catherine, that it's actually going to happen? Do you think they're going to fix it?
Well, both parties have said that they don't want it to happen. That doesn't mean that they'll actually cooperate and act like adults and prevent it from happening, but at least there is interest on both sides in making sure that the entirety of the fiscal cliff, meaning, you know, the $500 billion of tax increases and then all of the additional spending cuts, does not all happen in one big whammy. So I think it's unlikely. Well, at least, I don't know. I mean, I'm in New York. Who knows what's happening in Washington? They're crazy in Washington.
Well, that's what we should have had.
But what we hear is that neither side actually wants it to happen, and hopefully they'll get it together and actually prevent at least the whole thing from hitting us in the face.
Felix, what do you think?
At the same time, remember there's that third bit of the fiscal cliff, which everyone likes to forget about because it's too scary,
which is the
debt ceiling. And that was so nasty last year, and it's going to be happening, mid-January?
Mid-January,
like
but wait a minute. Now, see, that's the thing. You're adding on to the fiscal cliff because for months and months and months, it was only the spending cuts and the tax increases. And now people are piling on debt ceiling as well. You're making it worse.
It's, you know, the Frankenstorm, we had the low pressure, we had the cold front, we had the full moon. It all came together at the same time. It's just like that.
The Mayans were right, I think is the lesson here.
That's right. How much of this, though, one last thing on this, how much of this is going to depend on what the markets believe, what investor thinks is going to happen? Because there's such a psychological game of, are they going to fix it, aren't they, Catherine?
No, this is the politicians.
Yeah. Oh, you think so?
Yeah, the markets are just going to react to the politicians. It's not one of those weird self-fulfilling, the markets will make it so things.
And I think for a long time, the markets have been assuming that, again, because both Republicans and the Democrats say that they don't want at least all of these things to happen at once, that they will not all happen at once. So to the extent that we can, you know, live in this collective fantasy that will hopefully be true, that Washington will actually act in the economy's best interest. Well, I think you'll see the markets still sort of
sanguine.
Assuming that that's true. Yeah.
Sanguine, yeah. Along those lines, though, Catherine, did you watch the president's statement today?
Yes.
Okay. I was struck, and I'd be curious as to your reaction, by how much he still seemed to be in campaign mode, right? He had the ordinary Americans behind him. He was using what was a four-minute version of his stump speech. Are you confident that this second-term president now will be able to get things done? And Felix, the question to you can think about it, is what about Congress in that regard? I mean, Catherine, what do you think?
You know, it's very hard to say. I think the assumption is that he has a lot of goodwill that he has accrued in the last few days. I mean, he did just get reelected. And you heard some more conciliatory words from John Boehner yesterday, I think it was, or the day before.
2 days ago, yeah.
2 days ago, yes. Thank you. Basically saying that he wants to work with the president and, you know, it is our job, you know, as legislators and policymakers to fix this thing and to make sure that we...
You sound so enthusiastic.
Well, I just mean that the president has to be sort of seizing upon what goodwill there is and to the extent that the people who have been his opponents and enemies in the last few months have been a little bit cowed. That may work to his advantage if he doesn't look too combative.
Felix, do you think Congress is going to come to the table? The Republicans are going to come to the table in earnest?
I have a little bit of hope that they will, because historically they always have. Yeah. We haven't had these massive fiscal negotiation games of chicken in the past. It was only in the first Obama term that the congressional Republicans started getting incredibly obstructionist and refused to do anything, and it didn't work out for them in the elections. And so maybe they're going to learn to grow up now.
Concentrates the mind.
One Felix can Sim, but yeah. hope.
Felix Salmon from Reuters, Catherine Rampell from the New York Times. We got to go. See you guys.
Thanks, Guy.
Have a good weekend. Before we move on, a couple more of your rebranding suggestions for that fiscal cliff. Here you go.
Fiduciary kerfuffle.
The economic canyon.
Frankencliff?
If the so-called fiscal cliff were a TV show, Fiscal Street Blues, Law and Fiscal Disorder, or Fiscal Cliff, the Deficit Slayer.
The Fiskamarole.
Economic escarpment.
Past due doo-doo.
No, man. Oh. You know how to reach us. We're on Facebook or Twitter at Marketplace APM. Or you can get me. It's at Kai Rizdahl. Great Britain will soon have a new spiritual leader. The Bishop of Durham, Justin Welby, has been named the next Archbishop of Canterbury, the most senior priest in the Church of England. He is not, however, your average minister, and as a result, British bankers may soon be getting an earful from the pulpit. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has that story from London.
To be nominated to this post is both astonishing and exciting.
It is astonishing. The next Archbishop, Justin Welby, was once an oil company finance chief. He knows as much about derivatives as divinity. Luke Hildyard, who campaigns against corporate greed, believes he's just acquired a powerful new ally.
He's not some naive, ethereal figure. He knows what he's talking about, and it would be very difficult for big business to dismiss his concern.
And he's made his concern about corporate malfeasance very clear. He says shareholders should suffer dividend cuts if their companies commit a crime. He's railed against what he calls sinful corporations. And Ed Haddis of financial website Breaking Views says he's been very critical of the banks.
He seems to feel that much of what bankers do these days is of no social value. So I think he's going to be a pretty formidable opponent to the weak spots of the banking industry.
But Brian Mayers of the British Banking Association doesn't feel threatened.
Constructive criticism from somebody who has actually been in there and understands how the markets work could be very enlightening.
You're not shaking in your shoes then? You're not nervous about this appointment?
We welcome the appointment.
He may come to regard the new archbishop as a mixed blessing. One of the most famous archbishops of Canterbury was described as that troublesome priest. Now, Justin Welby is no Thomas Becket, but history may be about to repeat itself. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Speaking of history repeating itself, we come now to Amazon. First it was books, and then electronics, and then almost everything else. Now wine, apparently. Amazon has just launched an online wine store with about 1,000 bottle selection, just for starters. Marketplace's Queenie Kim has that story.
Most wineries are cheering Amazon's entry into the business. Kathy Harshberger is the e-commerce manager at the Napa Valley Winery, Gloria Ferrer.
Well, I was very excited to see the wine marketplace come together.
Gloria Ferrer sells about 190,000 cases of wine a year. That's pretty big compared to most wineries in California, but not big enough to give it national name recognition. Harshberger says that she hopes that Amazon, with its 100 million customers, can help change that.
It kind of levels the playing field in a lot of ways, which makes it easier for large and small wineries alike.
Amazon is starting out by selling to customers in 12 states. But it won't be storing the wine at its distribution centers, and it's not shipping it. Instead, the Amazon wine store will play middleman. Marlo Daniel is a spokeswoman for Coppola Winery, also Napa.
As a consumer, you would go to Amazon's site, you would buy the wine, you would check out through Amazon, and on the back end, it would kick the order over to the winery.
The winery would then ship to the customer and give Amazon a cut in sales. Rob McMillan is the founder of Silicon Valley Bank's wine business. He's skeptical that Amazon will decimate wine stores. Unlike shipping books, shipping alcohol requires cutting through a lot of red tape.
After the repeal of Prohibition, we had effectively 50 different countries with 50 different laws.
McMillan says even now, while 40 states permit mail order wine, the laws are so complicated it's difficult to say how many states Amazon can actually make money in. I'm Queenie Kim for Marketplace.
Coming up, sit down and behave yourself or it's going to cost you.
I'm not surprised to hear that the students in the class were moderately obsessed with tracking the scoreboard because, of course they are.
But first, let's do the numbers. Well, all right, here you go. After an early rally, stocks pretty much settled back to where they started today. The Dow Industrials edged up 4 points, just a fraction of 1%, closed at 12,815. The NASDAQ added 9 points, a third of 1%, 2904. The S&P 500 ticked up 2 points, 0.2%, 1379 at the bell. Still, for the week, the Dow lost 2.1%, while the NASDAQ and S&P 500 each tumbled about 2.5%. Groupon clipped nearly 30% off its stock price today after quarterly revenue at the Daily Deal site failed to meet Wall Street's already low expectations. Oops. Shares of JCPenney unraveled nearly 5%. The discount retail chain posted a 26% drop in sales at stores open more than 1 year. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. Bond markets are closed in observance of Veterans Day, but the rest of Wall Street is at work. Speaking of veterans, we're honoring a lot of them. There were 21.5 million vets in the U.S. as of last year, according to the Census Bureau. And Madonna's Like a Virgin album was released on November 12, 1984. Go ahead, sing along. I know you want to. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. In New York City today, and New Jersey, and parts of Long Island, there's them that have and them that don't. I'm talking gas in particular. Supply shortages have rationing rules for consumers, in effect, and we'll talk about them in just a second. First, though, what do you do if you're a gas station and you don't have any gas? Oz Elma manages a Gulf station in Pelham, New York, that's just over the line into Westchester County, north of the city. Hey, Oz.
Hey, Kyle, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. But listen, don't you need gas to pump?
Yes, we do, actually. We are expecting.
When?
That's a great question. I keep asking to myself, when? Last 2 weeks, we don't know what's going on. We don't know our shipments. We don't know how many gallons, when.
Yeah.
But I believe we're going to be even busier because since we are at the border, if we get gas, we're going to be busier.
So let me ask you this. If you don't have any gas, why are you open?
We have coffee. Great, delicious coffee.
And Slim Jims and M&M's and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, we have all kinds of fat, carb, sugar.
Yeah, so are people actually coming by? It sounds like you're kind of busy.
Yeah, someone has to smoke.
Someone has to smoke? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because taxes are lower in Westchester, too, than Manhattan.
Kind of. I don't want to say too loud, but yes, it is.
How much money have you lost through this whole thing?
Lost a lot. A lot. Everybody thinks because of the lines we're making huge amount of money, but it is not like that. We lost a lot of money because of the line and the closing the station when we don't have gas. The main problem here, outsiders. So we don't see any regular customer. People come from Queens, Brooklyn, and Jersey.
People are coming from Jersey all the way up to Westchester? That's a hike, man.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday, two, three people came from my neighborhood. I live in Queens. So
if you live in Queens, how do you get up to Westchester? How do you get the gas to drive up to Westchester?
I work in the gas station. I always put on the side for me. I didn't say I ran out completely. I ran out for a certain amount for the customers.
You got to take care of yourself, right?
It's a selfish world. I'm sorry.
How long you been doing this, Oz?
Around 4 years.
Yeah, you ever seen anything like this before?
No. I mean, it's 4 years, not long enough, but I see a lot of feedback from other people, from the 70-year-old people, and they even didn't have any such experience like that. So this is ridiculous.
Hey, Oz, thanks.
Take care, buddy.
Oz Elma at his Gulf station in Pelham, New York, just north of New York City. All right, so let's say those gas stations that don't have any gas get some in the next day or so. The lines form, they get longer, and instead of the normal price, maybe, what, $3.75 a gallon or so, they start charging $5.75. Would you still pay? Doesn't really matter because today New Jersey's attorney general went after 7 gas stations and a hotel for jacking up prices, and New York is investigating too. But us being an economics show and all, we got to thinking maybe price gouging might actually help things along. Marketplace's Scott Tong weighs the pros and cons.
Steve Pulaski is from Queens, but when Sandy hit, he was in Vermont with his dad when mom called from home. He spoke by cell phone.
saying that she was waiting 3 hours on a gas line. So me and my father, we got a couple 55-gallon barrels, went to this local gas station and filled them up.
He drove home, offered the gas on Craigslist.
Within 10 minutes, I had more than 10 responses. It was like a Sandy of phone calls.
Each sale is a negotiation. The average price, $11 a gallon. I'll let that sink in. He's part of the problem, isn't he?
But in economic terms, he's part of the solution.
Oil analyst Stephen Coppett at Douglas Westwood weighs in.
He's bringing fuel to the area that simply wouldn't exist if he hadn't brought it down.
In other words, the sky-high price gave our gouging friend an incentive to get the gas to Queens. So if everyone paid 10 or 11 bucks, Coppett says drivers would only buy what they need.
Then there would be plenty of gasoline for everybody, and those lines would disappear.
Of course, that economic world crashes into a political one, where $11 gas is immoral and unfair. James Tierney is former Attorney General of Maine.
The economists can debate and wring their hands, but if you're an attorney general and you see price gouging going on, you're going to do something about it.
So drivers won't get soaked by Sandy and by high gas prices. Except at this price, affordable gas may also be scarce gas. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Anybody who's ever run a meeting at work appreciates the difficulty of keeping everybody involved and paying attention. Now, instead of adult professionals closely focused on the task at hand, imagine a room full of seven-year-olds more closely focused on recess. That's the daily deal for a lot of teachers out there who are constantly trying to come up with new ways to get kids to behave. So here's one. Keep score. From the Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Marketplace's Amy Scott has the story.
Scott Leitzel is showing a class of second graders how to save a Word document. He teaches technology at William Packa Elementary School in Baltimore. He walks from desk to desk with an iPad in hand, awarding points as students like Selma finish each task.
Selma, I see the date, I see Alston, I see last name. Perfect.
That ping you hear represents a point for positive behavior. Selma's name pops up on a screen at the front of the class, along with a cartoon-like avatar, a little blue monster with a pink belly. Leitzel moves on to another student.
Is that what we were looking for?
Yeah.
Perfect. Make sure you get some points.
Then Mr. Leitzel spots Charles, off in a corner, eyes wandering.
So it's interesting. Like, I noticed that Charles is off task, and I want to see, you know, if he looks around at the screen.
At that moment, Charles's name and avatar pop up on the smart board. Did you catch that sound? Minus 1 point for being off task.
I didn't have to say anything. Got the message. Turn around. Now he's back on task, and I'm sure he can earn that point back quickly.
Leitzel is one of thousands of teachers using a free software program called Class Dojo. It lets teachers reward and punish students' behavior as it happens. Class Dojo co-founder Sam Chowdhury is a former teacher. He says the program is a bit like those electronic roadside signs that show you how fast you're driving.
When motorists are shown their speed, that's an order of magnitude more effective than police traps. You already know that information. It's on your dashboard. But just by the fact of it being displayed to you in real time actually changes behavior.
Chowdhury says the aim of Class Dojo is to catch students being good. Teachers are encouraged to award points for paying attention, helping others, or persistence.
Positive, consistent reinforcement actually improves behavior.
Bobby Moore started using Class Dojo this year after hearing about it from another teacher. Moore teaches fifth grade at Furman L. Templeton Preparatory Academy, a charter school in Baltimore.
Incidents of physical aggression have gone down. Incidents of disrespect have gone down. Students are more aware of the rules, expectations, and procedures that we have in our classroom.
His students seem to like it. 10-year-old Deshaun Morris says he tries to earn points.
Because I like the sound of it, and it's fun because the little characters come up.
Tell me about your character.
My character looks like a monkey to me.
But watching Moore's class, it's easy to see how the technology can take on a life of its own. At one point during a poetry lesson, students object that Tyreek is getting too many points.
Everyone, once again, take their pointer finger, put it up in the air. I'm looking. Tyreek is always the first one up.
I'm still looking. Let's see if everyone's up here.
It seems the behavior management system is causing its own behavior problems. Moore tries to regain control.
I'm glad that everyone wants to do the right thing and earn points. If you eventually can do the right thing, you will get the recognition. So please do not worry.
I'm not surprised to hear that the students in the class were moderately obsessed with tracking the scoreboard because, of course they are.
That's Doug Lemov. He's an expert on classroom management and author of Teach Like a Champion. Lemov says teachers need some kind of system to keep track of behavior fairly and consistently. Teachers can spend more time keeping order than actually teaching. But Lemov says technology can only do so much.
Well, I think it's sort of typical of a lot of technology solutions, which is it can probably help make things function more efficiently. But the core to effective classroom management is always human interaction.
Class Dojo is a work in progress. Co-founder Sam Chowdhury has been watching how teachers use it and adapting the program. He says making it more seamless may require more training for teachers. Right now, it takes just a few minutes to fire up the app and start doling out points. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, this week's sign that the apocalypse might actually be upon us. The Pope is going to get on Twitter. Yeah, he's looking for a whole new kind of follower. Heard that one already. It could be tricky, though, squeezing even a trimmed down papal encyclical into 140 characters, especially if his handle turns out to be, as expected, at Benedictus PPXVI, which is his name in Latin. That is 16 characters right there. So there you have it. On Twitter, we're at Marketplace APM. I'm at Kai Rizdahl. Today, the Dow edged up 3 points, just a fraction of 1%. NASDAQ added 9 points, a third of 1%. The S&P 500 ticked up 2 points, almost 0.2%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitar Nieves. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. J.J. Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, injured veterans are turning to some unlikely jobs to help them heal.
Just to see that one little sprout come out of the ground, or to see that one little baby chip its way out of the shell, is worth every ounce of pain.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you on Monday. This is APM.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.